Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast, and I see connected to us through the magic of the internet, the lady of the podcast. Hi, Diana.
Hello there, John. Hello there, Stacy.
How you doing, folks? You can find my good friend John Hogue's blog, Hoguewash.com, on the internet.
Yep, and Stacy blogs at theothermccain.com. That'll give you a hint about how this podcast got named. And he also can be found at other fine spots around the interweb, such as spectator.org.
Yes, that's correct. And being that it's a Saturday night, we have some football scores for you. In the Gator Bowl, Kentucky edged North Carolina State 23-21. Ole Miss defeated Indiana 26-20 in the Outback Bowl. And right now in the fourth quarter, Iowa State leads Oregon 31-17 in the Fiesta Bowl. Of course, yesterday, the mighty Alabama Crimson Tide was triumphant over some team. Who was that? Oh, Notre Dame. Yeah, that's right. It was Notre Dame that was the scheduled loser.
And Drew Rodney was unavailable for comment.
Yes. And yeah, and meanwhile, Ohio State defeated Clemson last night. I was very impressed with Ohio State's mastery of Clemson. So that's going to be, that sets up a thing. You know, my wife is from Ohio and her family is Buckeyes fans. So that'll be a win-win next week in the national championship game. Meanwhile, Vanderbilt season is over and nobody cares.
So we'll get to Vanderbilt later in the podcast. Actually, this is a podcast.
Speaking of which, we have, speaking of your hometown, Nashville.
We're going straight to Crazy People Are Dangerous.
Crazy People Are Dangerous. You know, last week, the podcast, we addressed the bombing on Christmas Day in Nashville, and you know, there was very little known about it at first, and it seemed strange that this RV was parked downtown, apparently full of explosives, and in the wee hours of the morning, it began broadcasting a warning, if you're in the vicinity, to evacuate. And it turns out that the guy who was inside the van was named Anthony Quinn Warner, a rather eccentric 63-year-old. And by eccentric, of course, I mean crazy.
Batshit crazy.
Yeah, well, more like wizard. Folks, this is something, as I was talking to John Hogue here before we went on the air. I never in my wildest dreams, beginning, starting out as a young journalist, I never thought I would be covering lizard people.
Well, actually, I guess the fact that I started out in the broadcast business in Nashville, which means right in the core of the entertainment industry, and Stacy, the nature of crazy there is just completely different. And, but this guy is like so far over the edge. He sailed off the edge.
It is a thing. By the way,
What you got, Diana?
Okay, let me give you a really quick, I'm hoping less than 1 minute capsule of the crazy. This is not a new crazy. This is a fairly old crazy. It goes back as far as Velasovsky, but we're going to kind of skip that part and hop forward to a synthesis who died in 2017 of conspiracy theory called, and I always want to call him Alex, but his name is Jim Mars, M-A-R-R-S. I encountered him quite accidentally, God, as long as 30 years ago. And I always thought he was a great writer and quite off his head. But he had a book called Rule by Secrecy, which I, by the way, regard as the crib notes for Q. And everybody
who's QAnon.
Yeah, it's all, he's like the unacknowledged author of the QAnon stuff. If you were alive, you should sue for plagiarism. Anyway, but in Rule by Secrecy, the first half of the book is fairly standard Bilderberger, the Rothschilds, you're one half, you're just a half hop, skip, and jump away from screaming, "Da Jews," which is really sick and weird. But the second half of the book is all about I can never get this guy's name. Sitchin.
Sitchin, yes. Sitchin,
actually, if you pronounce it properly. His theory of, he claimed that he was actually translating these cuneiform tablets himself, and that he found this wonderful tale of these reptilian aliens that were actually running everything. And read his Wikipedia, it's absolutely mad.
Yeah, his book is 1976 book mm-hmm. called The 12th Planet.
Correct. Nibiru. It's a really interesting, it's the most coherent insanity I have ever read. fortunately, I encountered the wonderful work of a curator of the British Museum called Irving Finkel, and you should look him up. He's brilliant. Anyway, Mars borrowed all this stuff, related what it was about. Ix also picked it up, David Ix. David Ix is very popular, I think, because he has this British accent and this really plummy tone. So people actually listen to him and think he knows what he's talking about.
Well, he's an ex-BBC sportscaster, so that's where he gets the...
But he's completely out there. I mean, the lunacy and a British accent evidently give you a lot of credibility.
Well, apparently, I'm just catching up on this. Zechariah Sitchin and Jim Mars especially, was often on George Noory's Coast to Coast AM broadcast, which was listened to back in the day if you were a truck driver. After midnight, and folks, I remember tuning into AM radio late at night. George Noory with just every kook on the planet.
It was either him or you were listening to country music from Ralph Emery at WSM, also in Nashville.
But it was Art Bell that started this thing, and then George Noory.
Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the versions of Nibiru is it's the planet that's 180 out of our orbit, and so it's always on the other side of the sun. We ever get to see it. That's how they were able to sneak up on us.
And this crazy thing. This lizard people theory, according to David Icke. The British royal family, are shape-shifting reptilian creatures, okay?
Well, that could explain some of it.
Charles.
But the idea that, and the thing is that in researching all of these people, David Icke, Jim Mars, Zechariah Sitchin, all of them were best-selling authors. In other words,
yes.
This is like, oh, who is the guy behind Scientology?
Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard, right? Okay, is that you? The craziest things you can imagine become popular. Okay,
oh,
that there is this ready-made audience for insanity.
Well, yeah, of course. The story about Hubbard and Harlan Ellison tells the story.
Not Harlan Ellison. That was L. Sprague de Camp. Harlan's much too young.
Anyway, well, no. Apparently, they intersected with each other during a convention. And he overheard him making the claim that he was going to, since he wasn't selling well in the science fiction market, he was going to start his own religion.
No, that was L. Sprague de Camp, supposedly a meeting of the Futurian Society. Honestly, I've actually heard recordings of people discussing this way back as far as the 60s.
But the point is that most of this, these sorts of crazy things are not actually people who believe it, but people who are trying to sell something.
On the other hand,
you do. Some of them then begin believing their own tales.
Well, think of it this way. Do you remember that this is a long time ago now? But the furor over a rather bad book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the spin-offs of that, by the way, are what drew me into the whole, into all of this. I have an entire shelf full of cranky stuff, and a lot of it's incredibly weird. Anyway, one of the authors at one point finally said, was interviewed and said, no, I decided I would like to find something a little more susceptible of proof. My own personal impression after reading through, five or six of the books and their sequels, was that these guys got caught up in one of those French intellectual hoaxes that can go on for decades and never seem to be able to extract themselves from it or insist on some actual proof.
Right.
There's a lot. The thing is, people get caught. You get caught up in following a story and investigating a story. And before you know it, you have stepped way out across the line and into lunacy. And next thing you know, you're believing in reptilian aliens controlling the world, the Bilderbergers, and
JFK.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, of course, Mars was indeed a JFK conspiracist. Go on.
Yeah, and he was from Fort Worth. So, of course, yes, he was about 19 years old when JFK was assassinated. His original claim to fame, such as it were, was spinning conspiracy theories about the JFK assassination. And so
it's interesting, you have people who basically put these stories together and package them. There's the whole Lost Continent of Moo thing that came out through the
God, yes.
And that was pure fiction. On the other hand, there are people who like got into it and believed it and it was a big deal for them. And there's still people who think that the Illuminati trilogy is true.
Yeah, and the thing is that I said crazy people are dangerous. Okay,
yes,
I have said this over and over and over again. But here's the thing, okay, is that we crushed Al Qaeda, we wiped out ISIS. But how are we going to stop kooks who believe in lizard people? In other words, if every random crackpot is to be presumed a terrorist threat, oh my God, they're everywhere.
Well, maybe we need a Department of Herpetology.
Well, what we need is I don't know. I think we need to bring back the state asylums and have a very generous residency policy. You know, what happened is that in the 1970s, as a result of civil rights attitudes, the idea was that, well, it's wrong to lock up people in these inhumane loony bins, you know.
Well, but unless they're a danger to themselves or others.
Right.
The problem is crazy people are dangerous.
Yeah. And so just being crazy. And the other thing is that the states wanted to save the money that they were spending to incarcerate these people. And then you had all the lawyers, you know, trying to sue somebody. So right, you know, to avoid custody, and the cost of insurance has gone up. So now you could be, you know, crazy as a loon, and it's difficult to get you committed for more than 72 hours.
Well, but the thing is that the societal costs of not continuing to operate Hotel California, which is the Camarillo State Hospital that I used to live just up the hill from, the cost of
that general institution.
The cost of not caring for these people properly, putting them out on the street, societal cost, I'm willing to bet if we'd be money ahead to go back to what we were doing 60 years ago.
Yes, but speaking of crazy
people. We have
better
drugs.
Speaking of crazy people,
we have better drugs, and the problem is working with street people in Westminster, we've got people on the street who, if they were in a situation where someone was managing them, their medication for them, and they were taking their drugs, could operate effectively. And maybe they don't need to be locked up in the loony bin because they're not that crazy, but maybe they need to be in some sort of halfway house or managed situation. So yeah, there's something perhaps in between. But speaking, you were getting ready to go off on our...
Yeah. Someone who was going to be institutionalized at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue pretty soon, I'm told.
Well, no, actually... Naval
Observatory, yes.
So the Naval Observatory is where this person's going to be institutionalized. Mm. I had a post called I Don't Believe Her. Kamala Harris has spoken about her family.
Kamala. Isn't it Kamala?
I have noted.
Kamala.
Kamala.
Evidently.
But anyway, she spoken.
She says Kamala half the time. So who the hell
Kamala
knows?
Right. I'm probably defaming her by quoting her accurately. Anyway, she talked about her family's multi-generational celebrations of Kwanzaa when she was growing up.
Right.
Now, she was raised by a mother who was a recent immigrant from India, and she spent a significant part of her childhood in Berkeley, so maybe there were Kwanzaa celebrations going on then, but most
there
of...
There may have been.
But
she, the Bay Area.
Yes, and it was... she was born 2 years before Kwanzaa was invented, but multi-generational, her mother was an immigrant from India raising her. Her grandparents were in India and in Jamaica. So multi-generational celebrations of Kwanzaa when she was a kid, I don't believe
likely,
it.
Likely.
And well, maybe she'll come up with an old family photo and that and prove me wrong, but I'm not looking forward to it. But that brings us to this, the way this whole year is shaping up. I had a post, we actually mentioned it last week, but I put it up again, the Are You Pondering What I'm Pondering, for the last day of the year last year was basically something that may just be an insightful warning. I think so, Brain. But what might happen when 2020 turns 21 and starts drinking?
Starts drinking. That was, I've been looking at that and going,
well,
making little horrified noises.
Well, but let me give you my New Year's predictions for this year that I posted yesterday. First of all, Harris's vice president will be a woman. No, a lot of people are saying it's going to be the former Mayor Castro of San Antonio, but now I'm going to say she's going to pick a woman. I believe there's going to be a limited nuclear war in Asia. I think the Democrats in Congress will be unable to pass a federal bailout for the blue states. They're going to try, but they're not going to have the political capital to do it. At least two blue state governors are going to leave office either through impeachment or recall or some sort of politically forced resignation. And number five, the Cubs won't win the World Series and Vanderbilt won't win the SEC football championship.
That's pretty safe. Yes.
Well, there are no guarantees. What we're prohibited and your mileage may vary. By the way, I've had one commenter ask me where I think the land war might, whether I think the nuclear war in Asia might be, and I responded. Well, I responded. India and Pakistan are in Asia. India and China are in Asia. Mm-hmm. Iran and Israel are in Asia, and North and South Korea are in Asia, and et cetera. And the response to that was, well, I know my geography, but you know. What do you think is going to go on? And basically what I believe is that the likely scenario is an attack on Israel by Iran. Mm-hmm. I think even with the direct and indirect benefits that the Iranians are going to receive from the Biden-Harris administration, their internal economic and other stability in the country is going to drive them to desperate actions. And we're going to see that a little bit later in the podcast. I think basically nuking or attempting to nuke Israel may be seen by them as a way to pave the way for the return of the 12th Imam. And most of the government there, and certainly the Ayatollah who runs the place, is a 12er Shiite. Yeah.
You know, I really don't know how much they actually really believe that. I think that's a Western attempt to explain crazy we don't understand in the end.
Well, I'm not sure. Basically, I've talked to Shiites who believe it.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Okay. Do you know, it's odd. I've met a lot of, I knew a lot of Iranians growing up, people who were refugees, rich refugees, but refugees. And I never met one who didn't pour ridicule on the idea. Now, granted, that's a long time ago, and these are people who got out, so...
And they were people who would have to have gotten out. Also, the fact that you have the government being run by 12ers doesn't mean that every Shiite is a 12er. But I should point out to, I guess I should explain what that is. The 12th Imam is supposedly is still alive, even though he was born over 1,000 years ago, and has been hidden from view. But he occasionally intervenes, even because he's still living among us. But when he is revealed again, he and Jesus, according to the Shiite 12er doctrine, will restore world peace.
And they will emerge from a well. Don't forget that part, which is always the one that makes my head ache.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I was just trying to be as succinct as possible there. Meanwhile, I had a post this afternoon that I entitled, "Don't Let Your Mouth Write a Check." ... Legal Insurrection is reporting that Iran is making public threats against President Trump's life. Basically, they're saying that tomorrow is the anniversary of Revolutionary Guards Commander Soleimani being assassinated and that they're out for revenge. And these are statements made by government officials in Iran. Mm-hmm. That strikes me, once again, I was talking about desperation on Iran's part. Their economies in free fall and collapsing, mm-hmm. because not just because of the economic sanctions, banking sanctions we have on them, but the Trump's energy policy has driven the price of oil down to well below what Iran needs it to be. Now, I doubt that the Iranians will be able to carry out their threat successfully. Their mouths have written a check that their asses can't cash. But I don't think they're going to learn the right lesson from their failure. I mean, they should learn to get in line and start behaving as responsible members of the international community. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the evil brew of politics and religion that the leadership in Iran has won't permit them to do that. I think they're going to be convinced that they really need to finish that nuclear weapons program, mm-hmm. and use them.
Well, the thing is that part of the problem here is that, frankly, much of Europe just hates Israel. Okay, that there is a sentiment does not come out and express itself so publicly.
Well, but there's also a whole bunch of people who are coming back into government who wish we were Europeans and feel the same way. And I fully expect that the Biden-Harris administration will take every step they possibly can to remove any restraints on the Iranian nuclear program.
Yeah, and this is madness. It's a dangerous place to go.
2021 is 2020 having turned 21, and it's drinking.
And well, you know, New Year's Eve they were talking about it as Ramon's Day. 2020, 24 hours to go. Yes.
I want to be sedated.
Oh my God, I can see you as a punk rocker, Diana, back in the day.
I never did the whole thing, but I pogoed in my day. Yes.
Oh, you pogoed in your day down in the mosh pit, as it were.
Yes. Given my size at that time, picture 5'3", about 98 pounds. Pogoing and getting, when people started slam dancing, I usually retreated.
Yeah, I dug the Ramones, but you know, I wasn't into the whole punk scene. I was more of the, you know, 70s rocker kind of thing. But anyways,
middle age is that time when they quit playing good music on the radio.
We all are. You know, it's really sad. I heard the other day, it was a mashup, I guess they call it. God, I am old. But they had Phil Collins doing I Can Feel It Coming in the Air, and some weird rap thing interspersed with it, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, see that. Yeah, go for
sorry,
it.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I Can Feel It Coming in the Air Tonight, Oh Lord, is a thing that for, you know, if you're my exact age, is like, it's this huge piece for you. It's atmospheric. It fills every space in your head. You know, romance, danger, anger, teenage angst.
Well, I think for me that song might be I'm Not in Love by 10cc, but you know, that's
also a really cool song.
I dated myself there, but yeah, I was about 13 when that came out, you know, and so. So yeah, the songs that come out from your adolescence have a significance for you that it's almost like a, speaking of things that have a significance.
Well, I was first going to point out to people that math is hard.
Oh, it is.
It is. And according to the Pennsylvania State Representative named Frank Ryan, analysis of the November election shows that there were 202,377 more votes cast than the number of people who voted.
That's more than, that's twice the number by which Biden won, guys.
Yes.
Yeah, a discrepancy of 170,000 votes.
On the other hand, we do not like discrepancies in our bank balances, being good capitalists. Oh. And therefore, we need to point out that there is this item called the yellow button.
Folks, if you will go to theothermccain.com, which is my blog, you know. Go to theothermccain.com, and in the middle of the center column near the top, you will notice the yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and also to the support of the podcast. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's site, Hoguewatch.com.
Well, you can look right there. There it is at the top of the sidebar over on the right, an icon of a tip jar. Click upon it and you'll be taken off to PayPal and you can give a donation to support Hoguewatch.com. Or you can scroll down in the sidebar. You'll find a link that will take you to the Hoguewatch store where you buy all sorts of items. We'll just refer to them as items that are branded in various ways associated with the blog, and that helps support the blog. And also, you'll find links to Amazon shopping at Hoguewatch and the other McCain and at other blogs around the internet. And those of us who participate in the Amazon Affiliates Program actually earn a small commission when you use those links, but making a qualified purchase. So that's another good way to support a blogger. Do that. Meanwhile, you still need to remember the five most important words in the English language.
Which are hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You know that people also can support the blog in other ways. They can donate their comments, which help stir the interest in the blog, and we both have comment sections that we that can be lively from time to time. On the other hand, some people donate both their money and their effort to their causes in other ways. For example, in Georgia.
Yes, folks, you know, this Tuesday is the last day to vote. You know, they're voting early.
But, the real day.
The Georgia runoff for two Senate seats are up for grabs, and this will determine control of the U.S. Senate. So I have many friends and relatives in Georgia, so I certainly would.
We even have a Georgian on the podcast.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Anyways, we will get there. We will get there. But wealthy celebrities are flocking to Georgia to help elect two left-wing Democrats. And the story is from Breitbart.com. More than 50 Hollywood celebrities are trying to raise money to help John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, the Democrat challengers to Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. And I'm told the polls tell me it's neck and neck, right? Okay. And I, you know, I don't believe the polls anymore. I don't believe that Biden won Georgia. I just don't believe it.
He didn't.
You know, I think the lizard people. Okay, I'm not trying to go off into crazy territory there, but the evidence of anomalies in the election result down there. And so, folks, if you're in Georgia, it's important to vote. And how are things going down there in Lowndes County, Diana?
Well, from what I can tell, the early voting has been more even than you would expect. Honestly, 90% of the people I've spoken to who are Republicans plan to vote on January 5th, like me. I intend to get up early, put on my woolies, and get my butt down to the poll. I intend to be there when they open the door. And I don't know if we can make that much of a difference given the steal that's going to take place in Fulton County. But I'm going to do my best. I have talked to a lot of my friends. I urge them to actually show up and vote in person on the fifth. And I don't know what else I can do. I am dedicated to, okay, I could take an honest loss. I really could, but I cannot abide this madness of the theft, the voter fraud and the theft of the election. The fact that I consider it baked in outrages me. And everybody I've spoken to is as outraged as I am. On the other hand, you know, that thing you had about cancel culture, people are really, really cautious about saying what they actually think.
Yeah, we'll get to that. By the way, one of the things I would like to ask you, since you are in Georgia,
yes,
is one of the things I have learned from covering campaigns is that you can't tell which way a campaign is going if you're not where it's happening because you don't see the TV ad rotation. Are y'all being blanketed by ads down there?
Yes, we are. Now, remember, we don't watch commercial TV. We stream. And we try to stick with selected stuff. Given our fare, we receive, I call it 80 to 20 on political ads, 80-20 Republican versus Democrat. But yeah, we're being blanketed. I mean,
we watch space stuff,
gun stuff, academic stuff, dinosaurs, you know, that sort of thing. So,
yeah, because the thing is, and I learned this because one of the weird experiences of my career was in early 2012. I was covering the Republican primary campaign. And if you will recall how that went, Rick Santorum won Iowa narrowly, very narrowly, and it took him like 10 days to count the votes there. Then Mitt Romney won New Hampshire. And then it was wild and woolly. I remember Rick Perry dropping out on the eve of the South Carolina primary, but Newt Gingrich won South Carolina. And a lot of conservatives said, okay, Newt is the man. So I then flew down to Florida, and my friend Dan Collins, his parents owned a condo there. And so I was staying in his condo near Naples. And so I go in and I immediately set up, I turn on the TV. And oh my God, were the ads just, it was Newt's funeral. I was watching this and I was trying to tell people, I said, you have got no idea what these ad rotations look like down there. I mean, you know, if you're watching Fox News, you saw nonstop just these ads attacking Newt Gingrich. And so those of us watching the polls, right, of these Senate races, and I'm going, I can't believe that the people of Georgia would elect an elitist like John Ossoff, who is just born to money. And or a clown, I mean, a dangerous Jew-hating clown like Raphael Warnock. And you look at these two characters and you say, how could they possibly be neck and neck in the polls? But it's the advertising that is making the difference.
Well, yeah. And what's going to be interesting to me is it's one thing to see what the advertising is on a cable system in South Georgia or someplace almost, you know, there's a significant, well, yeah, there's this, but there's a significant part of the state of Georgia that's either like Valdosta and the Tallahassee media market or the Chattanooga media market. And, there's going to be a, but what's interesting is, as you were saying, you were seeing the killer ads on Fox News. It's interesting to see what's going to be running on cable and what's running on cable in the area of Fulton County and the surrounding counties there.
Yeah, my friends in Gwinnett. Sorry, I'm learning. have been are absolutely just banging their heads. Can we stop seeing so many political ads? We've made up our minds. Let us leave in peace. But yeah, my big thing is possibly because I'm really, I think, a rather sophisticated consumer of media, I don't find the ads that the Republicans are putting out, the attack ads against Ossoff and Warnock, despite the fact that both are, frankly, horrible candidates, I don't find the ads particularly effective. The ads that Warnock is running with him standing there sounding in his nice conservative suit, being all calm and gentle and reassuring and avuncular, are far more effective than the Republican ads, and that bothers me.
Well, you know, it's you know, I am also think of myself as someone who is a sophisticated consumer of media, but I don't want to underestimate the average voter and their ability to see through what is happening, because I recall the millions of dollars. I mean, just the millions upon millions of dollars they threw against Lindsey Graham in South Carolina.
Or Cocaine Mitch in Kentucky.
Right, right. And both of them won by double digits. Now, I don't know, you know, if the situation in Georgia is such as that, but I you know, is that, you know, because I know that I independently, right, in any election will research the candidates. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to think, I would hope to think that Georgians will not be deceived by what we're looking at, because John Ossoff strikes me as the Beto O'Rourke of Georgia.
Well, I think you're being too kind to him.
I think so too.
In other words, just a born rich lightweight, and he's accusing Kelly Loeffler of quote unquote campaigning with the Klansman, because this fringe kook shows up at some event he was at and gets his picture taken with her, and she has no idea who he is until afterwards.
How is she supposed to know? She gets her picture taken with hundreds of people.
Right.
That's one of the things a senator does. But here's the other thing about the advertising. Mm-hmm. And I this is from my point of view of having been an advertising copywriter. you target an ad at somebody you think you can close the deal with. Mm-hmm. You don't worry about an ad that isn't aimed at your market. For example, writing ads for Cadillacs, you don't care about what somebody who's making, you know, $10,000 a year, you know, cares about. And it's the same thing here. If you've got a group of people who you believe the other side has got locked up and that you can't reach, then what you have to do is go after the people you think you can reach, or to keep the people you've already won energized. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that's what the Republicans have gotten in themselves into in Georgia. Basically, they have given up on the nice suburbanite vote in the area surrounding Atlanta.
No. In fact, that's who they're going after. But the problem is that they're not going after them effectively.
From what I've seen, it looks more like they're going after the rural vote. But by scaring people on things like gun control.
But no, we'll they haven't. I'm in rural Georgia, and I haven't seen a single thing about gun control. I see a lot of stuff about Ossoff wants to defund the police. A lot of quotes of Raphael Warnock in the pulpit and his goddamn America nonsense and his other things. But the trouble is that he's too radical for Georgia sort of thing. Here's the thing. That isn't a problem here. Here, the issue is if you were to approach the minority community here about he's so radical, that's not going to be their issue. Their issue is that he is corrupt, that Warnock is corrupt, that Ossoff is corrupt. The ads about Ossoff's corruption are probably really effective with people who might be persuadable. The issues about Warnock, they're going at it wrong. Talking about the fact that his children's camps were continually under investigation for abuse. Now, granted, it doesn't matter. Church camps are always facing that, but constant health violations. That's the fact that he's gotten really rich.
As a pastor,
the stuff that people respond to.
Well, see, something else that people aren't figuring out is that Warnock left Georgia, went up to New York, began his pastoral career in New York, and then went to the Baltimore area before returning to Georgia, and that he's being propped up, I'll put it to you that way, and has been for years by political money. In 2014, he started this thing about Medicaid, trying to, and got himself arrested protesting over Medicaid expansion or something like that. And it was just a political stunt. And he's got this thing, about registering people to vote and stuff like this. And the idea that, he's basically the flip side of Stacey Abrams.
He is, yes. With a lot more reassuring mannerisms. You should see these ads. He's standing there in his nice, quiet suit with the nice, quiet blue shirt and the slightly darker blue tie. He looks and he has this wonderful voice. He's really avuncular, calm, friendly. If you don't know that he went from being scrabbling, hard scrabble, to being really quite wealthy from the time he moved from New York to Baltimore to back to Georgia, you don't understand. He's corrupt as hell.
My goodness.
Get it.
A corrupt Democrat. Who'd have thought?
A corrupt politician. Come on.
In other words, he was a politician from the pulpit, and it's political money that has gotten him rich.
Part of the problem is as she was saying earlier, Stacey, that people are, even in places like Valdosta, are afraid to speak out about what they really think about these guys.
Yeah, and I mentioned this problem. There, I've got a post that went up today called Skepticism and Silence, Cancel Culture and America's Growing Political Crisis. And what the springboard that originally got me off on this was there's a column in the New York Post today, and I'm going to name the author. By Rob Henderson. It ran a couple of days ago. I'm sorry about that. It's called Cancel Culture is Creating a Soviet-Style Society of Liars. Mm-hmm. And this is based upon the fact that under Stalinism, right, okay, the fact of the thing is, why is it a totalitarian system where you can be punished for speaking the truth, turns people into liars, okay? Mm-hmm. They begin to just lie about everything, okay? And when people are afraid to speak the truth, right, you don't know what, if you know that you are not speaking the truth, you begin to suspect that others are also engaged in this charade, right? Mm-hmm. And so I point out in here that what we're seeing, this very one-sided public discussion mm-hmm. about, for instance, just one thing, removing Confederate monuments, okay? They have in many communities, including the former Confederate capital of Richmond, they have voted to rename Jefferson Davis Highway. Now, it doesn't matter, by the way, what your opinion of Jefferson Davis is in this report. It's a historic name, okay, that people, right, when you go to change the name of a major thoroughfare, this means that all the businesses are going to have to change their address. It creates a lot of paperwork, okay, in renaming these streets. Okay, and why? Who was offended? It has been sitting there with this name for like 100 years. Yep. Okay, this goes back to the earliest era of motor travel, that when the idea of naming the Jefferson Davis Highway was supposed to go all the way to the West Coast because, oh, by the way, if people don't know this, that Jefferson Davis commanded a very famous regiment of called the Mississippi Rifles in the Mexican War, right, of 1846, I believe it was, that he was his courage in action in the battles of Buena Vista and Monterrey. Made him, this was one of his earliest claims to fame. He fought in under his former father-in-law. He had married the daughter of Zachary Taylor. Mm-hmm. You don't know who Zachary Taylor was. But the point is that he was a famous soldier. He was a West Point graduate. He became the Secretary of War in the administration of Franklin Pierce. So, mm-hmm. wait a minute, why is California part of the Union? Oh, yeah, because we won the Mexican War. So the idea of the Jefferson Davis Highway extending all the way, the whole thing, and this was, people don't even understand this.
How can we discuss history if we erase it? If we take right. the names away and remove the monuments?
But you people, can people nowadays, like it. People are being that. I'll get to this point in a minute. But mm-hmm. the point is that after the Civil War, okay, reconciling the South. Okay, and creating a united nation, reuniting the country. Okay, the monuments to Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, go down the list. This was part of trying to encourage a patriotic sentiment in the reunion. of the nation. And so the idea that this is somehow intended as an insult to Black Americans or something like that, it was so far from the minds of
maybe it wasn't. Maybe it had to do with the fact that 100 years ago, they knew that 80 years after that, La Raza was going to be stirred up. Yeah, and this was against all. Right.
It's insane, but.
That's just it. It is insane.
Wait a minute. Glenn Reynolds has observed that most of the racial tension in America is fomented by journalists. If journalists were doing their jobs, right, informing the people about the facts, right, we wouldn't have this, you know, because you see these ignorant, entirely ignorant people talking this hateful rhetoric. And it's like, you know, at some point you would turn their mics off. And, you know, a lot of what gets said on CNN could go unsaid. You know, we had riots all across this country because CNN decided that to help elect Joe Biden, they needed to gin up some racial hatred. So we had cities burning, you know, because of the publicity. If you go to my blog, if you will read this post, the one illustrated with the picture of Jefferson Davis, in there you will see a link to the death of George Floyd. That links to an article at the American Spectator by George Perry. It was published in August that points out that the knee on the neck had nothing to do with George Floyd's death. He was already dying, by the way,
of a fentanyl overdose.
Of a self-induced fentanyl overdose before he ever went to the ground. They tried to put him in the car and he's panicking. Why is he panicking? Because when they came to arrest him, he swallowed the drugs. This is not the first time he had done that, by the way. But
Stacy,
I'm on a rant.
Stacy?
Yes.
It's okay.
You know what your problem is?
My problem.
Your problem is you're relying on the facts. Okay.
Well,
and the facts and the truth don't have anything to do with the narrative. The narrative is about power.
Yes. But backing up slightly, very, very slightly, the choice of CNN and everybody else and social media to air the whole 9-minute horror show had a lot to do with what people ended up thinking.
Yeah, and they refuse, and even to this day, by the way, even to this day, CNN, MSNBC, the rest of the major media refuse to tell the story of that's what is in the autopsy and the thing the toxicology report shows that he had 3 times the lethal limit fentanyl in his system. If you watch the body cam video, which most people never saw, the body cam video shows that before they ever put him on the ground, they were trying to get him in the car and he was freaking out, "I can't breathe." Why was he freaking out? Because when they had come to arrest him, he had swallowed the drugs he had on them. And as I said, this is not the first time this has happened to him, by the way.
Yeah, well, I'll date myself. There's a wonderful Cheech and Chong routine about, the cop showing up and I think it's...
Gotta eat the dope, yeah.
Yeah, oh, no, man, they're not. That's not a blue light. And then the expression on Tommy's face when he realizes where he's about to be.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Goss tactic stems the dashes.
Whatever.
Now, one of the presuppositions behind truthful communication, which we're not having in Western civilization these days, is that the language used will have sufficient commonality between the talkers and the listeners that you can have a conversation where both sides got an understanding of what's being said. And that's not a valid basis for approaching many of what the left is saying and writing now, as you were pointing out. They often use old words with new or contradictory meanings. And take the word sedition for an example. Right now, the left is saying that filing all these court cases about the election is sedition. Well, sedition is defined in law as acting to prevent the government from acting lawfully or trying to
overthrow the government.
Overthrow the government or to take the government's property illegally. And you know what? Filing a lawsuit is exactly the opposite of that. That's filing a lawsuit to stop the government from acting illegally. So, you know, if you're going to have a conversation and the other side is saying that A and not A are true at the same time, I mean, I don't know how to have that conversation. Where you get new pronouns and new categories of oppression. Right. And, you know, I can't remember if Gostex or the oppressor or the oppressee or whether it's good or bad to be destemmed. And, you know, I don't even know if the Doshes have come up during the 2020 conversation. So for now, I'm going to stick with standard American English as my primary language. I'm just too old at 73 now. You know, if the new immigrants don't have to learn a new language, why should I?
Yes. Well, anyways, this is the headline on that, the Gostaxe and the Doshes, is a science fiction story from the 1930s.
And if you want to, and it's based on actually some semantics publications from the 20s and even before World War One. And if you'd like to read that story, it's semi-amusing. You can go to Hogwash, and I've got a link to it there. Meanwhile, the next thing is, before we get to the last couple of little rocks I want to throw, I'm not making this up, you know. The Girl Scouts are suing the Boy Scouts.
I know.
Approaching their members.
Well, not exactly, but the Boy Scouts decided they would become gender inclusive, so they started a program that lets girls in, and they changed the name to Scouts BSA. Basically the Girl Scout says that's causing brand confusion and parents aren't going to know which group to send their kids to. So, you know, okay, trademark issues in scouting. Meanwhile, one last little rock to throw about under the category of don't know much about biology, the New England Journal of Medicine has published a paper saying that it's a bad idea to put a child's sex on the birth certificate. The abstract of the paper reads, I'm going to read it verbatim. Sex designations on birth certificates offer no clinical utility, and they can be harmful for intersex and transgender people. Moving such designation below the line of demarcation wouldn't compromise the birth certificate's public health functions and could avoid harm. Folks, boys and girls are different and they develop differently. And now I'm not a physician, but I would think that if I were, I would want to know the sex, the child I'm dealing with, and particularly as a pediatrician, to monitor the child's development properly. And I think that if I were to avoid that, I might be engaging in malpractice.
You would be.
Well, anyway, neither of the two doctors who are authors of the paper are pediatricians, and the third author is a lawyer. Tina McGrath, by the way, was unavailable for.
You know, it's interesting, you know, one of the things.
Well, sex.
One of the things that the transgender movement has done is to use intersex as a Trojan horse to smuggle in. And by the way, remember, I'm the guy that spent 4 years reading hundreds of feminist books, including Judith Butler's very influential book called Gender Trouble. which is based in part, one of the things it's based on is the book. I can't remember the woman's name, but she did this thing about intersex. And I wish I could call her name off the top of my head. But anyways, but the point is that what they're trying to do is to use this tiny percentage of people, and it's less than 1%. It's not even a tenth of 1% of people born with intersex conditions, as claiming that the quote unquote gender binary is a mirage. Now, wait a minute. I have two brothers, okay, right? There is no doubt that I am male. My brothers are male. There's no doubt there. My wife, she is definitely female. She has two sisters and three brothers. None of them have any ambiguity. We have six children, four boys and two girls, all of whom are completely normal. That is, we know whether they're male or female, and so do they. I have four grandsons and one granddaughter. So in none of these cases familiar to me did anyone have any ambiguity about their gender. And Stacey, probably everyone listening to me can say the same thing about themselves, their parents, their siblings, their children, their grandchildren, all of them.
Stacey.
Completely unambiguous. Stacey. And yet the tail has to wag the dog.
Stacey.
Yes.
There you go, bringing facts into it again. You know, only are you a sexist, though, you're a racist.
Yes, because I do not believe that Alec Baldwin's wife is Latino.
Latina. She's
Latina. By the way,
Spanish is a gendered language. It makes a difference.
Yes. Okay. Well, I have a post up today called Mi Casa and Beacon Hill. Okay. About Hilaria Baldwin. And by the way, the reason I'm making that thing, that noise, Hilaria, is because I've got some video up here, some video clips of Alec Baldwin appearing on two different, on Howard Stern's radio program and on David Letterman's TV show, talking about his wife having a Spanish accent. And if you listen to the way he says her name, he says Hilaria, right? Okay, which sounds nothing, it's spelled Hilaria. Okay,
yes.
Because her actual given name is Hillary Hayward Thomas. She's an absolute New England purebred wasp. Ancestors go back to Vermont, like in the 1700s, okay? She has zero Hispanic ancestry. The only thing, number one, her grandfather was an engineer and spent some time in Argentina in the mining industry down there. You know, they do a lot of the mining down in Argentina. And so he became enamored of the Latino culture down there. And so he insisted that his children should learn Spanish. And her parents, okay, after they retired, he was a lawyer. Her father was a lawyer named David Thomas Jr. And her mother is a doctor. Hang on a second. What is it? Dr. Catherine Hayward. Okay.
Yep.
Harvard. Okay. That's how American they are. Okay. But her parents, after they retired to the Mediterranean resort island of Mallorca.
Mallorca.
Okay, which is it's actually in the Ballad of John and Yoko. actually mentions Mallorca, I believe. But oh my God, we're already at the piano part. But anyways, the point is that she is a fake. She's a phony.
Yes.
She is the Rachel Dolezal of Latinas, okay? And yet, she claims that she represents the beauty of diversity. And speaking of the beauty of diversity, we're nearing the end of the broadcast of our first podcast of the year 2021. And so we will be back next Saturday night, 7 o'clock, the usual time.
Good night, Stacy. Good night, Diana.
Good night,
Stacy. Good night, John.
You want to go out?